Do you mind being middle-aged?
Well, you're the first person to point it out to me that I was, and that's somewhat ungracious. Yes, I mind. I think a terrible mistake has been made somehow. And I suspect that I'm traveling in time, really. That I'm basically, I think, 21 years old, and that I've been misclassified somehow, or time has slipped.
You talk in the book, actually, about the possibility of your hero, Billy Pilgrim, jumping from one frequency of time to another, so that one minute he's now, like 1970, the next minute he's back in the Second World War, the next minute he's in childhood, and they're all jumbled up right through the book. Do you really believe that's possible?
Yes, I think that we are doomed through eternity to repeat this program, as to do it again and again and again. I think that our lives are somewhat like pendulums, that we start at birth and swing to death and back and forth throughout all eternity.
But it would be nice to think that the things that you like doing, or the things that you took triumph or delight in, could be repeated. But like this program, it would be fairly tedious if this thing were going on forever, wouldn't it?
No, I don't agree. I think it's going to be a very pleasant program. I would just as soon spend eternity here as anywhere, I think.
Why do you write so sort of briefly about women?
I think it's partly out of respect. Is the more I see of them, the more I understand it would be in bad taste for a man to try to write about one. Also, there's the problem of if you introduce a woman into a story and describe her as she is and arouse reader interest, is it must be a love story. And lots of writers have recognized this and have specifically excluded women from stories because they wanted to talk about something else, as I wanted to talk about the bombing of Dresden.
Well, but do you think that any man can write about women properly? Do you think that Madame Bovary is a real woman? Or do you think it's a man looking at what he thinks a woman is?
Well, Madame Bovary, certainly, when I read it, I was thunderstruck because it described my mother-in-law exactly. This happens to... I'm a barbarously educated person, so I only read Madame Bovary 3 years ago. So, you know, but by that time, I'd had this mother-in-law for 20 years, and it described her beautifully, yeah.
Do you sympathize with these militant women in America? We have them here, too. And I don't say we have them here in any patronizing sense.
Yeah.
The ones that believe, for example, that even in the best arranged marriage, a woman is a kind of long-term, polite slave.
I think that the women, without knowing it, are announcing they're not going to reproduce anymore. That is one thing they are saying, and I think that this announcement has deep biological motives that they don't understand, that they think they're making a political statement, but actually it may be humanity simply crying out about life in the city. It's specifically a New York movement.
You think biology does that for you?
Well, it does it to lemmings, and it did it to the... the Tasmanians, for instance. Occasionally life has become so lousy for human beings that they have ceased to reproduce. A classic example of this is the Tasmanians, who were hunted as animals by the first colonists there. And they gave up having children before they were killed off.
You have 6 children, so it hasn't affected
yes,
you yet.
Yes, a very poor Tasmanian. Three of them are adopted. I think the population explosion is a very serious problem, and if I had actually generated 6 children, I think I would be an abomination and certainly not entitled to appear on television. Of these 6 children, 3 my own and 3 adopted, they themselves are not eager to reproduce.
And are they grown up?
Yes, as most of them are over 20.
Boys, girls? 5,
2 girls and 4 boys. But they don't seem to be much interested in reproduction, and there's something about my teachings or about my writings, I think it discourages everybody from reproducing.
Well, you all end your book. Your books all end at this kind of total disaster.
Well, they end with the end of the world, of
exactly.
course. But I taught at the University of Iowa for a couple of years and had many students there. And I keep in touch with them, And none of them are reproducing.
Do you think they're attracted by your thesis that it's all going to end in disaster?
Well, I have met young people who hope the world is going to end. As I ran into one who was 26 years old, who thought he was going to be a child forever, that people would take care of him. And he didn't realize he was going to have to pay income tax, see? So he hadn't paid for 5 years, as he thought, you know, more straight sort of people. People in double-breasted suits had to pay income tax. And the federal government caught him, and they sent him this tremendous bill, and going to put him in jail, and he was horrified. And we had to comfort him and tell him that this was indeed the law in America, that you had to pay a part of your income to the government to build the roads and support the army and the space program and so forth. And then we showed him the forms he was going to have to fill out and figure out his own penalties. And he actually articulated the hope that maybe the world was going to end, you know.
Before he had...
that it was pointless to do all that sort of thing because the world maybe would end next Friday. He would just as soon have it end as fill out the forms.
Can you talk to your children? I mean, constructively, or do you make noises at each other?
Yeah, I talk to them, and we get along very well. But I've tried to also excite them about life, and I haven't been able to do that as a... they don't see life as an amusing opportunity, and I'd hope they would.
What do you reckon the reason for that is?
Well, I think I've persuaded them that the world is really going to end, and I didn't mean to be that persuasive, you see.
You mean they don't have excitement?
Well, they, for instance, they've graduated from college, from good colleges, and... I can afford to send them to law school or medical school. And I said, you know, hey, be a doctor or be a lawyer. And if somebody had offered me that opportunity as a young man, I would have thought it was an amusing and interesting thing to do. It's why not? There is a fear in them. And in their entire generation, people who are between 20 and 26 now, there's a fear that they will somehow be perpetuating the system, which they see as an evil system. They really want to see it broken.
Do you fear what will happen to them when they're a little older, having found they won't break or change that system?
Yes, I do. But human beings in extremis, in real trouble, generally respond very well as they become resourceful in situations like that. As you're right, they will not be able to change the system, and the American system will not be broken.
I'm sure it will not.
Yeah. Since I've been over here, a number of people have asked me, rather hopefully, if the America is about to collapse, you know, and they want something else built on the foundations, as the young people do. But part of the American tragedy now is that we have constructed a collapse-proof government, and nobody should build that sort of thing.
When you say that, can you be more explicit? What do you mean?
It does not have to respond, and it's so enormously strong and impersonal now that it can't respond. And I think, for instance, the framers of the Constitution envisioned a government which could be overthrown under some certain circumstances, and they encouraged the people to think of overthrowing it in case it ever became unjust. But now it is so dependent on machinery. As you know, you must overthrow computers. You must overthrow great machines, institutions rigged like machines. And it can't be done.
Do you still, though, when you say I'm an American, does that still ring a bell with you or kind of make you feel pleased?
Yes, I will never leave America, and I'm terribly excited about what's going on now. And... the challenge is perfectly wonderful, and the intelligence and bravery of the people is great, I think, is equal to this challenge, and I want to see what's going to happen next.
When you said that people are best when they're in trouble, you were a prisoner of war, weren't you?
Yes.
Did you find that to be true in those circumstances?
Well, it depends on what sort of trouble. Is that that sort of trouble went on too long? That sort of trouble Americans handle very badly, and this is not an American libeling his own country. It's a historical fact and has been commented on by American generals, among others. Among prisoner of war communities, the prisoners who behave worst are Americans, and this was true in Germany, as there were prisoners from practically every nation in the world in Germany when I was there. The Americans were the dirtiest, as they would stop brushing their teeth, they would stop washing, they would get running sores, they would get diseases that other prisoners of war did not get, as they became totally demoralized. When this was acknowledged officially, was during the Korean War, is when Americans got back their prisoners of war. They were in the worst condition, as the Turks were in great shape.
How do you why is this?
I've tried to understand it. Americans cannot stand to lose. There's something about their upbringing leads them to believe that they are to win or to quit. As Americans are very good soldiers, they're good infantrymen. But in defeat, when they are defeated, something in them collapses. It's almost as though they can't go home again, having lost. I suppose it's because our parents tell us, you know, your mother in particular tells you to go out there and win. You can do it. And she won't, if you express a doubt about yourself to an American mother, she will tell you nonsense, you know, and will clean that loser's thought out of your mind and send you out there to win. So if you lose, you don't dare go home to mother. I had a number of American XPWs who had seen the German thing too, wrote me about what their theories were. One American wrote that he had noticed that the American prisoners of war who held up best were the fundamentalists, the one who believed every word in the Bible, who believed in heaven and hell. They were customarily from the South. And he said they were perfectly used to the idea of death and were willing to accept it as part of the natural order, and that most Americans were shielded from the idea of death, who thought about it seldom.
But aren't all human beings, generally speaking, reluctant to think about death?
Yes. I think maybe our culture protects us more than other cultures do. I don't know. This was another man's theory.
You write comedy. Why? Is there anything? What are the ingredients of that?
Well, the basic ingredient of comedy is that you're a helpless person, and it's the only response you can make under overwhelming odds. You see, or you can make a blind last charge to glory, but basically, when you can't fight back and you really can't do anything to rescue yourself or anybody else, you have to do something, and you can put your fist through a door, or you can kick a baseboard, or you can make a joke. And some people make up very funny jokes.
But if you kill somebody, that stops being funny, does it?
Well, it certainly does. And you run out of jokes, too. As I managed to joke through the Second World War, and an awful lot of that was ugly. I was in Biafra recently, it's just before it fell. And I made jokes for a couple of days, and it was not possible to adapt in that way anymore, is to make any more jokes. So he simply shut up.
Do you think you'll write anything more funny? I mean, I say this because Slaughterhouse-Five seems such a grand book, and such a funny book, and terrifically kind of almost terminal sort of book.
Yeah, it is. It is a terminal book, and I'll have to reinvent myself and get myself going again, because I think I was aimed, really. I've been writing for 20 years, and this was a book I had to write, and I didn't think I would ever do it. And having done it, I think I promised myself I'd never have to work again, you see. And so I haven't. But I'd better get to work again. But I think most careers last 20 years. Is a career of a baseball player last 20 years if he's extremely good. Interestingly enough, chess masters are through when they're 38, which means they've been playing chess for about 20 years and really aren't intuitive at it anymore. Alan Arkin, the actor, has been acting for 20 years. I had lunch with him a while ago, and he told me he was sick of acting. He was going to be a director and a writer. And Norman Mailer, of course, after 20 years, has become a journalist. And I think that there's something biological about this. Is you're wise to become something.
They all have all responding to one common factor, which is time. What do you think about time?
Well, as I've said, I do believe it repeats itself. I hope it does, because, you know, I don't want to die and go away entirely. I'd like to come back and come back and come back on almost any terms. And that would suit me if I got to cycle through my life through all eternity. Is this great novel idea I've described to you. I was at a university, at the University of Washington, lecturing and telling about this wonderful idea I had about time, is that we cycle back and forth. And there was this one professor yawning and shifting back and forth. And I finally asked him what the trouble was. And he said Spinoza had already said all this. And I didn't know that. I came by the idea honestly and originally. But
it all happened in Europe.
Yes.
Thank you very much indeed.